Namaste and welcome to another edition of the Bharat Varta Weekly. I am Roshan Karyappa and I have with me Abhishek Paul to run you through the news and events of the week that was. We're missing our friend Nirav Khanodra today. He's off to a holi party. Well, holi is upcoming and happy holi to all of you. All right, so we have a bunch of interesting things to discuss this week. First of all, the Enforcement Directorate has arrested Delhi Chief Minister Arvind Kejriwal in the liquor policy case, and this follows the arrest of Telangana Legislative Council member K. Kavita. Prime Minister Modi has visited Bhutan and he's also conferred the highest civilian honor there. Unfortunately, there was a gruesome terrorist attack in Russia, and the details are still, that story is still developing. We'll bring you the latest on that. Down south, a controversy erupted about the Music Academy Conference 2024 and its decision to honor T.M. Krishna. And then, of course, yesterday we had the start of the IPL season. Yeah, lesser said the better as an RCB fan. So, all of that and more on this Bharat Varta Weekly. If this is your first time joining us, we publish content on politics, policy and culture focused on India. If that's your thing, do follow, subscribe to us on all your favorite platforms. We'll bring you a couple of episodes or more every week. All right, with that out of the way, let's get started. So late Thursday evening, the Enforcement Directorate of India arrested and took the Chief Minister of Delhi, Arvind Kejriwal, into custody. He is accused as being the kingpin of a liquor scam in collusion with other ministers from his cabinet and party who have already been arrested and held without bail. This arrest comes after the minister willingly disobeyed 9 summons from the ED for interrogation. Abhishek, now there are both sides to it. The opposition says that, you know, this is the death of democracy. Right, they say that the timing is very convenient, right ahead of the elections. But I mean, the same opposition, well, part of it at least, the Congress was batting for this some time back, right? And they seem to have changed their tune right now. And on the other hand, you know, we're seeing that this could be a potential revenue loss of thousands of crores for the state itself, right? And what do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting part of this liquor scam is that the Congress party, or at least the Delhi Congress unit, was the one who were the first ones to start making a noise about this and make all these allegations. And basically, since then, the law enforcement agencies have been following that track, right? So basically, this new liquor policy was brought in by the AAP government to kind of streamline the, you know, liquor business in Delhi, which ran with sort of old and arcane rules. But very soon it got embroiled in controversies and they had to roll back this policy pretty soon. So over the last, let's say, few months and maybe a year, people like the Deputy Chief Minister Manish Sisodia has been arrested. Sanjay Singh, another important AAP leader, has been arrested. And now Arvind Kejriwal, the CM himself, has been, you know, held by the Enforcement Directorate. As you said, obviously, this is like a very convenient sort of talking point now for all the opponents of the current government, right, in terms of arresting a major opposition leader. So, the timing of it obviously is like a double-edged sword, right? Because on one hand, we see some media reports where the BJP party workers in Delhi, etc., seem very enthused because they have also been obviously batting against Mr. Kejriwal and whatever his alleged corruption activities or misdemeanors in this case have been. So that has been like a shot in the arm for the BJP party locally, but it also brings into question the general image of the government. Now, obviously, one could say that, you know, if you cry wolf too often, like, people stop caring. And so for many of us, probably the foreign media narrative, or let's say the Indian media narrative, liberal media narrative, is probably not a case of, you know, of us caring too much anymore. But as you said, like obviously the other side will make this point very strongly now.
Yeah, yeah, they're calling it vendetta politics, an abuse of power by the center, and an attempt to stifle democracy or stifle or murder democracy, apparently. Well, but, you know, what a fall from grace for Arvind Kejriwal and the Aam Aadmi Party, right? Founded on the basis of anti-corruption, and we all remember the Anna Hazare movement and so on. And yeah, I mean, almost serendipitously, Mr. Anna Hazare surfaces around this time, right? I mean, to give his sound bites as well.
I mean, he just doesn't like alcohol. So the moment he heard that, you know, Kejriwal had something to do with alcohol, he basically,
yeah,
you know, because I think for Anna Hazare, he would simply like abolition.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reports also say that apparently the ED found the chief minister may have been spying on ED officials, right? And that's pretty bizarre, actually. Yeah, so...
Well, I mean, I can probably believe that given, you know, if you remember some of the old antics of the Aam Aadmi Party where they would say, give a bribe and then record it and, you know, show it to us and things like
that.
So,
well, I mean, give a bribe, take a bribe, I mean, allegedly, all allegedly, right? So anyway... Yeah, for now, the court has not granted bail and directed that the accused remain in ED's custody until March 28th.
And one more news I was just seeing is the CBI has also said that the moment the ED's time is up, they would like to bring in Mr. Kejriwal. So it's kind of like, it's unlikely he might be, you know, free to go back to campaigning soon if the CBI also gets his
Yeah. So anyway, you guys let us know. I mean, is this the death of democracy? Or, I mean, is it, you know, just the opposition crying foul over things which are, which should happen in any, you know, law-abiding country, right? I mean, hey, I mean, you know, if you look at the Prime Minister and the Home Minister, both of them, right? I mean, they had to cooperate for many, many years, right? You know, in multiple different cases. So, yeah, well, you let us know in the comments what you think. Well, speaking of unusual timing, last week, Prime Minister Modi visited the neighboring country of Bhutan after their Prime Minister, Shering Tobgay, visited India and invited Modiji. During the visit, Prime Minister Modi was welcomed with great pomp and show. He was awarded with the Order of the Druk Gyalpo, Bhutan's highest civilian honor, making him the first foreign leader to receive this award. Later, Prime Minister Modi announced that India will be extending a sum of 10,000 crores in support for the 13th five-year plan of the country. Well, Abhishek, I mean, should we be handing out 10,000 crores, you know, to Bhutan, you know, and why not a loan instead, right? We've seen, you know, how China has eminently used that mechanism to sort of gain leverage with multiple different countries. But yeah, I mean, I suppose, you know, Bhutan being on the border and sandwiched between China and India, right? It is an important sort of a country for us to negotiate with. And we've had great relationships as well before. It is, as a country, I mean, I think they are also starting to look outward, kind of attracting or trying to attract investments as well. Abhishek, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would say Bhutan, like Nepal, is part of our Indic civilizational family as
right.
well, right? So I think it is incumbent on India to, you know, take care of Bhutan to the best of our ability and also, you know, try to limit Chinese influence. If you remember the Doklam case, like if you get into the weeds, it's a very complicated three-party sort of agreement and arrangement,
yeah.
right? Where how much China can come in, how much India can come in, what Bhutan takes care of itself and so on. So it's obviously a very sensitive and complicated and let's say balancing act that India has to maintain,
yeah.
right? To keep best interest of our own as well as Bhutan in mind. So in that sense, I think, you know, it's fine. What is interesting is I think it will take some time before we really get to know actually the real intent behind these frequent couple of visits so close to the elections, because probably not everything will be covered in the press, and it may take time before we get to know what really was the intent and what was discussed and
Yeah,
agreed
I'm
here.
sure. I mean, as close to the elections, it must have been something that merited, urgency and was seen as important, right? So, yeah, the two countries plan to increase a trade partnership across sectors such as energy generation, tourism, and infrastructure. By the end of the visit, both the countries issued a joint statement saying that India and Bhutan will continue being the closest of friends and partners. All right. Some unfortunate news, actually. Late last night, reports and visuals surfaced of a ghastly terrorist attack at a venue near Moscow. The visuals showed three or four men with guns going around opening fire at innocent civilians at the Crocus City Hall concert near Moscow. This attack has resulted in the loss of over 60 lives and left hundreds more injured at the time of recording. The US Embassy had issued a notice 2 weeks prior stating that there was a risk of such an incident occurring. Ukraine clarified that it had nothing to do with the attack, while the US, India, and several other countries condemned the attack. Well, the visuals look startlingly similar to the 2611 attacks that happened here, right? But apparently, ISIS has taken responsibility for this attack. I mean, so with Russia fighting, these guys in Syria, you think, I mean, this is the start of, those folks reaching the Russian borders?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a very unfortunate incident in Moscow where the civilians have been targeted, right? I think the death toll is probably in the north of 60 people. And as you said, ISIS, and to be precise, ISIS Khorasan, which is one of the branches of ISIS, right, which operates out of South Central Asia and Afghanistan, who has taken responsibility here. Primarily, this unit of ISIS had been operating in Pakistan and Afghanistan, but with the Taliban coming to power, it was believed that these guys have been sort of driven out or sort of shut down. But obviously, this shows that they are still around and capable of doing big damage. And if you look at ISIS propaganda and how they justify these attacks, they are saying that the Russians have been also waging war against Muslims or committing atrocities against Muslims and so on. And so that is where probably the Syria connection also comes in, right? Because obviously, Russia is one of those parties which is involved in this very complicated Syrian civil war situation. So yeah, I think one more unfortunate thing is it seems the attackers were able to escape, and the Russians are still looking for them. So yeah, I think it continues to be a very sort of tricky situation for Russia. Ideally, they would not want to get dragged into one more conflict. But let's see as we get more news of this.
Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate. I mean, they've had war, they've had sanctions, and now this as well in their capital city. I mean, certainly, really hope that things get better. So Christine Fair had spoken about all these competitive interests in the Pakistan-Afghanistan region, right? Whether it is the Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and the ISIS, right? And somewhat, positioning ISIS as the new kids on the block who are way more enthusiastic and, of course, unafraid to do, things in the extreme, right? So that is kind of a developing region, right? We'll hope that, there is no spillover on this side of the world, at least, right? I mean,
And
nowhere,
did
in
you
fact.
see Pakistan and Afghanistan's border right now being a hot area, right? With the TTP also getting into a bit of a conflict with the Pakistani forces.
Right.
So this region does continue to remain volatile.
Right. Well, closer home, last week reports broke out that India is planning to develop and release its own index for democracy ratings for the world. This comes as Western rating agencies and the reports have been found to be filled with inaccurate and biased data, leading to unreliability. The government has approached the Observer Research Foundation, the ORF, India's leading think tank, to take up the task. This development has, as expected, received a lot of flak by Western liberals and has also been mocked by some lobbies. I can't think of a better sort of a country or a region to come up with these rankings. We're the largest democracy in the world. There has been a seamless transfer of power, well, barring the you know, emergency era, right? And yeah, 1/6 of humanity. Right, so why shouldn't we come up with these rankings ourselves, right? And why shouldn't we reverse the gaze? I mean, we've had these discussions with Professor Salvatore Babones, you know, who has spoken about, you know, how some of these ratings are put together, how ineffective they are, how inaccurate they are, and how they might also have a slant or an agenda against India. So it's about time, I think, that, you know, we do this. The ORF has been doing splendid work. In fact, we hope that someday we have Mr. Samir Saran on the podcast to talk about all of that. So yeah, I mean, this could be very, very interesting. Incidentally, last week, there was a happiness index that was released, right? And India ranks 126th, you know, 126th on the happiness index. And wait till you hear what other countries are happier, or people in other countries that are happier than in India. Well, you know, Ukrainians and Russians are literally fighting a war right now, but they're apparently happier than Indians, right? And they've lost million plus lives there, right? Israel and Palestine, the other two countries that are fighting a war, literally fighting a war right now, right, and have lost lives, you know, settlements, whatever, and are apparently happier than us. The US with, I don't know what it is, $15, $20 billion or maybe $10 billion of, you know, antidepressant market, right? Apparently, they are, you know, happier than us, right? So it's really ridiculous when you think about it. So in light of all of this, I think, you know, us having some of these indices and reversing the gaze on the West is a fantastic idea, I think. What do you think, Abhishek?
Yeah, I think, you know, what will matter is who from India is doing it, and even whether we are doing it seriously or we are also making it a parody of, you know, just putting out some numbers for the sake of it. So I think what will happen is it's good to make a start. It's also important that it will probably get its due respect and recognition in maybe a decade or so, right?
Right.
After, you know, people have looked at it and, okay, seen whether, how, I mean, these are not things where you can say accurate, inaccurate, but how, let's say, serious it is and how sincere it is, right? In terms,
yeah, at
of
least they should get it directionally
take,
right.
Take the inputs, right? Because right now, obviously, what is happening with these indices is these guys come, they appoint or they talk to people they call country experts, right? And we know these country experts are probably JNU professors, and, you know, stuff like that, right? It's probably Yogendra Yadav giving a bunch of interviews and, you know, India getting graded based on his views, essentially. So, I mean, we'll have to see how well job the Indian rating agencies do, but it'll take some time to establish their credibility, but it's always never too late to start.
Yeah. No, the bar is really low, right? I mean, Sanjeev Sanyal has written about this plenty of times, saying that the basic math and statistics are not being adhered to, right? So, yeah, do check out that episode with Professor Salvatore Babones. We'll link to it in the description. Very interesting conversation on all of these, you know, Democracy Index, Freedom House Index, so on and so forth, right? All right, on March 20th, Prime Minister Modi posted on X that he spoke on a phone call with Russian President Mr. Vladimir Putin to congratulate him on getting re-elected as president. Hours later, he also posted about his conversation with Ukrainian President Mr. Zelensky and also with the Ukrainian Foreign Minister slated to visit India in the last week of March. both the presidents extended formal invitations to Prime Minister Modi and said that they see India as a peacemaker. Well, even a couple of years back, I wouldn't have kind of like fathomed that this would be possible. The fact that, you know, there is a war happening, you know, all the way in Europe, and India is being seen as a peacemaker between these two, right? How is this whole multipolarity kind of playing into our favor, Abhishek?
Yeah, I think India has been sort of unfairly painted by a lot of media that it is firmly in the Russian camp. What has happened actually is India has tried to be sort of very fair and balanced towards both the parties. And so, for example, even in the Israel-Palestine conflict, obviously, India's first reaction was condemning the terror attack by Hamas. But since then, it has always been pushing for some sort of peace, ceasefire, release of hostages, you know, relief and rescue for the people in Gaza and so on. And so I think India, if you remember, one of the statements of Prime Minister Modi was that this is not an era of war, right? So I think India has sort of quietly been making its point, you know, to the world that it would like peace as well. It is obviously not in a position to sort of wholesale condemn Russia simply because, you know, we have a different relationship with Russia compared to the West. We are not antagonistic towards the Russians wholesale like how most of the West is today. And so that allows India to be in a position which is sort of different, right? Which some a sort of place where both parties can look at India potentially an honest interlocutor, right? And so that gives possibly a chance for India to be in the table along with definitely other powers in wherever this potential peace discussions could happen in the near future. I've heard that Switzerland is potentially a place which could host these kinds of summit talks, but we need to learn more about it. But yeah, let's see how that pans out potentially in the next few months.
Yeah, this is like fantastic news, really, you know. I mean, I think it shows India's rise in prominence on the geopolitical stage as well, right? So, all right, closer home, or I should say down south, over the past week, there's been some controversy brewing in the Carnatic music industry. The Music Academy honored performer T.M. Krishna with the prestigious Sangeeta Kalanidhi Award. He is alleged to have supported anti-Brahmin ideology and genocide and is accused of disrespecting esteemed artists such as Thyagaraja and M.S. Subbulakshmi. Musical duo Ranjani and Gayatri were the first to announce that they would be withdrawing from participating in the ceremony in protest. Several other artists joined them in solidarity. Well, it's an interesting sort of a question to ask, right? I mean, do we also consider, you know, an artist's political inclinations, social inclinations, and so on and so forth? But in all fairness, right, I mean, the people who have boycotted it have only said that, look, I mean, you are at free will to, you know, give the award to whoever you choose to be worthy of it, but we will not have any part of it because of our differences. And I think that's absolutely fair. You know, I mean, if you remember, I think in the first term of Prime Minister Modi, a bunch of these folks, you know, boycotted things, gave back their awards and all of those things. And apparently all of that was just fine, right? But somehow, you know, if these artists, out of their own discretion, you know, withdraw from associating with someone who has made really, really vile remarks, right? I mean, this is not someone who has been like mildly accusatory or something of, you know, one particular community or a particular religion. I mean, he has gone on record to say the kind of things that he has said, which I cannot repeat here. Right? I think it's only fair. It's absolutely fair. And also, if you look at the artists who have kind of withdrawn their support, whether it is Ravi Kiranji or Ranjini and Gayatri, or Dushyant Sridhar, the Trichur brothers, and so on and so forth, right? I mean, these are all very, very well respected in their own right. While the Music Academy is at its discretion to honor whoever it chooses, I think it's equally the right of these artists to not associate with people, they don't want to, right? So, and also I think, Dushyant Sridhar made this point on multiple media engagements also that T.M. Krishna hasn't participated in the sabhas, right? I mean, the ones that happened during the Margali season in December, he hasn't participated or competed or performed for the last 8 or 10 years, alleging the same things as, Brahminical privilege and things to that effect, right? So, well, all right, let's move on to something pleasant. Relatively speaking, at least for Chennai fans, since they have all of this Carnatic stuff happening anyway. On Friday, the latest season of India's flagship sporting event, the Indian Premier League, kicked off with a grand ceremony at Chepauk Stadium in Chennai. The opening match of the tournament started with CSK versus RCB, with the final game scheduled towards the end of the summer on May 26th. RCB, in a display of solid consistency, continued with their streak of losing the game against CSK. In all its years, RCB has won only one single game in the Chepauk Stadium, and that was back in 2008. Wow, that was the year I graduated engineering. So, needless to say, I mean, it's been a long, dry spell for us. Abhishek, I kind of wanted to avoid heartbreak at the beginning of the season itself, so I kind of stayed away from it. But I could hear, CSK supporters chanting away in the pubs and the streets. But yeah, what do you think?
No, I think, with this year, we can definitely be more hopeful, as the jinx probably has got broken, right? With the women's
team, yeah.
IPL now coming home to RCB. So I think, but I saw the match for about an hour yesterday, especially when RCB was batting. And actually, I felt like RCB has a really strong batting unit. They underperformed yesterday, but I think over the season, they will definitely have a lot of success because they have obviously Kohli, Duplessis, Maxwell, Green. So there's like a lot of firepower and experience. But it is the bowling which, traditionally has been the weak point. And, I looked at the bowling side of the team and it gave me no hope at all, right? So unless these less celebrated or less fancied bowlers, turn a surprise, I would still see RCB struggling. But I think it is the batting which remains the strength of RCB. And, they really did well even yesterday after being like 4-5 down. They managed to put up a decent score with Dinesh Karthik and Anuj Rawat. So I think the batting is pretty good. It'll be fine. But the bowling is still not really improved to make us like legit contenders.
So I'm going to sit this one out. But, who are your favorites to win the IPL this time?
I think, Mumbai Indians with Hardik Pandya coming in and becoming captain. I mean, I'm more than favorites. I'm very interested to see the dynamics, right? Like, they have sort of done a mini coup there, right? Removing the India captain. It's not like he wanted to go, right? So, that will be an interesting dynamic. But obviously, Mumbai and Chennai are the traditional strong teams. I think Gujarat, Rajasthan and Lucknow also have pretty decent teams. So I would probably say I would like to see someone new to win it. Maybe someone like Rajasthan Royals or LSG, if not RCB.
All right, with that, we come to the end of this Bharatvartha Weekly. Next week, we'll be publishing my conversation with Ami Ganatra, the author and columnist. Very exciting episode, very exciting conversation on politics, culture, and so on and so forth. Things that normally you wouldn't see Amiji talk about. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to publishing that and for you guys to check it out. Thank you so much for joining us on this weekly. Don't forget to rate, review, and do all of the good stuff so the algo gods smile upon us. Thank you again. From Abhishek and myself, do stay safe, take care, and Jai Hind.